legendary Music Row in Nashville, Tennessee, Larravee Guitars presents two verses in a chorus shy of a hit song. It's Scott and Heino and the Music Row Show.
All right, everybody, welcome back to the Music Row Show, brought to you this hour by Larravee Guitars. The number to call in is 800-688-9522, or you can always email into the show at mail@themusicrowshow.com.
That's right. Hey, how about that new theme song?
Oh, it's cherry. I love it.
This is our first weekend with the new theme song. We're very excited.
Very proud of it.
Thank you.
Best rocks.
And we should also say that we recorded that at the Song Factory with Kim Copeland at the producer's chair.
Yes.
And highly recommend her songwriters. You know, she does such a great job of helping you get what you hear in your head and actually making it sound exactly like you wanted it to. So
that's exactly right.
Yeah, check her out at KimCopelandProductions.com. Thanks for hanging out with us. If you're just tuning in, boy, you missed a really good hour with Dave Pomeroy.
Yeah.
He had good information. Remember, you can always listen to past shows by clicking the podcast page on themusicrowshow.com.
Yeah, but before we get going here, let's talk a little bit about Larravee's again, because I love to do that.
Absolutely. Well, you know, I've had a really busy couple of weeks, and today I actually had a little downtime. That Jen and the kids left, and all of a sudden I was alone in the house, and I finally had some time to just relax and play my guitars, play my Larravee's, and ended up spending a couple hours just trying different songs out with both my D10, you know, the big dreadnought with the rich overtones and everything, and then my OM3 mahogany top, which produces a crisp, clean, woody tone. Yes, I said woody.
Mm-hmm.
One wasn't better than the other, but certain songs were certainly better suited for one of the guitars, while others definitely sound better with the other one. So it was a great afternoon, and it really underlined the fact that there's really no one guitar that's perfect for everybody or every song, and it really makes sense to play as many as possible before you go out and buy one.
Absolutely. So, you know, the next time you're in the market for a new guitar, you know, do yourself a favor. Go out and play a bunch of Larravee's. They've got many different models to choose from. They
play
all
a bunch
sound
of other brands too.
Yeah, do that, but then go play a bunch of Larravee's and just listen. Listen to the balance, the excellent tone, and the playability of their necks. And chances are you'll fall in love with one of them and take one home, just like we did.
Very nice.
Their website, by the way, is Larravee.com. Larravee.com.
Beautiful. Heino, please introduce this this fine gentleman sitting here with us.
Absolutely. We are so excited to welcome tonight to our show recording artist Guy Penrod. Guy has been a member of the Gaither Vocal Band for a long time. Now he's actually struck out and started a solo career as a country artist. Actually, we've got his album here that just came out not too long ago called Breathe Deep. We're going to have a lot of great stuff to talk about tonight. So, Guy Penrod, welcome to the Music Row Show.
Thank you, guys. It's a pleasure to be here.
Thank you so much.
A sitting ovation.
Thank you so much. The crowd went mild.
Our favorite kind.
It's like doing a medley of your hit.
Uh-huh.
Yeah,
uh-huh.
One fan here tonight. Thank you, Lord. And we haven't even verified that that's true. Fan yet. We'll find out after the interview. That's
absolutely
how that goes, right?
Uh-huh. Absolutely.
Yeah, yeah. Uh-huh. Okay. Good.
Well, we're very glad that you're here. Thank you very much.
It's my pleasure.
And you know, Martha said you were tall, but I'm
holy cow.
We're going to look like hobbits next to you in the picture we take at the end of this. You
I've
know?
Got my elevator boots on.
Oh, good.
Okay.
Can I borrow
them? Tall. Yeah. Why not?
Okay,
yeah.
Thanks.
I felt tall for a long time until my 19-year-old outgrew me. He's 6'7".
Oh my gosh.
My 17-year-old now has outgrown me. He's 6'6", and now my 15-year-old is looking me eyeball to eyeball. So I just.
That's just not right.
I don't feel tall when I go home either.
Well, you have a tall wife who I believe was a basketball player, right?
She was. She played her whole collegiate career and then went to grad school at Vandy and helped coach the team, was a grad assistant coach of the women's team over there for
no kidding.
The time she was in grad school. Yeah, she's beautiful, 6'3". It's cool. Look at wife eye to eye.
Well, it's strange. You know, we've been doing this show for almost 4 years, and I can't tell you how many writers and singers have been on the show that started out as preachers' kids.
Oh yeah.
I mean, there's an epidemic of entertainers that are preachers' kids. How do you think that shaped you musically and as a performer?
Well, you know, I can't speak for all the other preachers' kids, although I would say the common ground is all our dads were in need of some music on a Sunday morning, and so they, by proxy, because they could tell their kids what to do, just said, get up there and sing something, you know. which is kind of how it happened for me. Before I can remember, there are pictures of me, my family showed me, of me standing in a folding chair singing, "Fill my cup, Lord, I lift it up, Lord." And the verse is funny because it goes, "Like the woman at the well, I was searching for things that could not satisfy," as a 3 and 4 and 5 year old.
Yeah, you know, yeah.
Yeah.
It's hard to satisfy a 3 year old.
Very hard, yeah. Especially being a guy singing like the woman, you know, that was difficult. But who knows how it all transpires. I think the church is a great training ground, essentially, for music, you know, because it's a good place for kids to get involved in choirs and in bands and all sorts of things. The churches I always went to and was a part of, music was a big part of church. You know? And so I think that's why so many musicians come out of a church setting, is because it's a place they can flourish. You know, their music can grow and they're in an affirming atmosphere, you know, parents and adults who just go, "Oh, wasn't that great, even if we sounded horrible," you know. And so I think it's probably attributed to they had the right environment to be able to practice there.
It was more nurturing, love. Yeah.
Now, with all of that having been said, did you do the typical high school thing and have a garage rock band along the way and do any of that stuff?
You know what? Unlike you talented gentlemen, as I heard you plug Larravee guitars, I can't play a dadgum thing. I mess up a CD player when I play. So I didn't have a band because my band was just in here. You know, I just sang. And I didn't involve myself in a band in high school, but I sang in all the choirs and all those competitions and the small groups that we had going through school and going through college. And sang my way through college, and then I have only sung for my supper. Every other time I've tried to make money doing something, I fail miserably.
Wow.
So I just turned to singing. When in doubt, you know, I put a cup in my hand and stand on the corner.
Well, you actually did an album, though, back in high school, right?
I did.
I mean, that's amazing. Tell us about that.
Well, I had a rich aunt.
Uh-huh. Okay,
there you
that
go.
Helps.
It all starts with rich someone.
Thank goodness.
And it was an aunt, you know, and she just loved me, and she loved that I sang. And so she said, "Honey, you go make a record." And so she paid for me to go into the studio and record a record. And I did so and loved it. Got it in my blood
that?
As a 15-year-old. I do.
Yeah.
A bunch of gospel songs that my dad loved and that did well, went well, obviously, in a church setting. And just got a little taste of what the studio was like and loved it. And I think that's what probably wet my whistle to say, I wonder if I could do this and, like, make money at it when I got out of college and moved here to town. And I made a demo reel and went around this very street, up and down this street. It looked a lot different in those days. It was 25 years ago. And started passing my demo out saying, "Hey, I'll sing on your record for you, or do your demos, and if it's good enough, you can pay me, and if not, send me home." And it worked. They bought it, you know.
That's a heck of an offer.
So spent several years in the studio on this side of the glass, respectively, like you guys do, making music and coming up with creative ideas for other folks' records.
Well, I'm going to back up just a little bit, because so you're a kid, and at what point do you realize, because, you know, there's you're in choirs, and there's a lot of kids that can sing and that have good voices, and but you have a range that, you know, okay, there's the baritones, there's the basses, there's the tenors, but it's very rare when you say, well, wait a minute, I can do several of these if you want me to. So, I mean, when do you realize, okay, I got something that's a little different than the other voices around me?
You know, I don't know that I cognitively had that thought. Mm-hmm. That, you know, comparatively speaking, here's this part and that part, and that these guys do this. And I just, the old saying, necessity is the mother of invention. Mm-hmm. Similarly, especially when I had to start making my living singing, when I'd walk into a studio and a guy would say, well, can you sing this? The answer is just yes. Mm-hmm. You know, mm-hmm. Okay, well, how about this? Yes. And you just do whatever it takes to make that happen. So if you had to scream one out, a high C, just don't tell me what note it is. Let's just go for it. You know? And the same thing is true on the bottom end. At the time I got in the studio, there was a need for low voices. And so I farmed myself
off. A lot of Randy Travis songs.
Yeah, as a bass, and subbed in for Herman out at the Opry. And then ended up singing bass on a show on Music City Tonight with Charlie and Lorianne for several years, just because that's the part that was needed. And dadgummit, I'm going to try to get in there and do my best and make it work, you know. And you know, the voice is something that you can stretch, too. You can increase your range or decrease your range, depending on how you use it. I got training as a kid all the way through school and tried to use it carefully, as educated as you can use a voice. You know, you have to at some point choose how you want to sound and what you want to, where you want to point yourself right. vocally. So I did that at some point, but try to always sing properly and from your gut.
Well, and we should say, because you're talking about college, and you actually had a vocalist scholarship, right? Mm-hmm. At a school in, was it Virginia?
Liberty
Virginia.
University in Lynchburg,
yes.
right?
Mm-hmm. That's where I went to college, mm-hmm. yeah.
And that's, I didn't even know you could go to school for that. So yeah. So that's...
Yeah, most colleges have a team of musicians that they send out to essentially recruit for the school.
Mm-hmm.
And so the music department gets a budget that they can work with to try to promote the school in the area, you know. And in our situation, at that time, the guy that founded that school was Jerry Falwell. And he was like a political lightning rod, you know. A bunch of people hated him, a bunch of people loved him. But either way, he could draw a crowd. So he always wanted music around him. And I sang in a quartet that he just loved that kind of music. And he'd take us everywhere he went, and we'd sing a song or two or three before he appeared to do whatever, you know, stir up a little bit of trouble. That's what he'd do. So I got a whole lot of experience doing that sort of thing and just kind of flying by the seat of your britches and, mm-hmm. and being, as the good old Bible says, on in season and out of season. Just whenever you jump up, you jump up and get her done. So.
Now, in retrospect, how much did getting that formal education, that college education, help in your future career?
It helps in many ways. I'm a big advocate of educating and sticking to something. I think, honestly, the education as far as the technique and training vocally has been a very, very immeasurable help. But even more so than that, it's just the discipline of finishing something.
Yeah.
You know, I tend to be a great starter. But as happens most of the times, if you're not real determined and you don't discipline yourself somewhere along the way, it's hard to finish things. So I just believe in setting a goal and starting it and then persevering all the way through the end of it. And along the way, you learn just a whole lot of people skills, too. Just the ability to get along with others, have roommates, see other people's points of view, know how to discuss, you know, subject matter and topics, know how to present yourself well. There are so many different aspects of learning that take place in college, even outside of the classroom, I think it's something every child should determine. Okay, I'm not just going to finish high school. I'm going to go all the way through and get a degree. For all the life lessons it teaches you. There you go.
I want to go back to school now after that.
You could play for your supper.
There you go. I don't know if that'll work, but we're going to be back with more of Guy Penrod here on the Music Row Show. Stick around. Music Row Show, brought to you this hour by Larravee Guitars. And in case you haven't guessed, that song is called Where the River Flows. The Gaither Vocal Band doing that. And our guest this hour is Guy Penrod, who's doing lead vocals on that tune.
Yeah.
Very nice.
I had a great time in that group, man. Bunch of great guys.
Well, you talked briefly. You started to talk about your Music City Tonight gig. How did that even come about? And then you sang backup for so many artists that became huge stars, and I can only imagine you probably played for probably four times as many that never became stars. And I wonder if, from watching everybody do their thing, if you got to where you could kind of say, wow, okay, that that kid's something special, and that one maybe not so much.
Well, it's interesting because there's so many different things I think that you bring if you're going to be an artist or you aspire to be an artist. I think the most important aspect of it, besides the given, which is you got to be able to sing or play something, you know, and not necessarily great, but you do have to bring that, you know, some level of musicianship to the table. Beyond that, I think the most important thing is your attitude and love for people. I believe that love for people in the connection that your music may make and what it is that drives you to do what you're doing, seeing it connect with people and then being able to communicate with those folks, obviously from stage, but then loving it enough to then communicate with them even when you're not on stage and just see people as people. I think that history is replete with wonderful success stories of people who enjoy people. And oftentimes it's even a strong enough aspect of the business of music that it overcomes your musical deficiencies also, is love for people. I think it's just a, for me, I think that's the root of any success in life, whether you're radio hosts or whether you're a mechanic replacing a clutch in a car, or whether you're a musician. If you love people and you're kind and you're honest and you're not a pain in the rear and dishonest, people will like you back. You know, in general, they'll come to your place of business if you treat them fairly and honestly. They'll listen to your music if they feel you respect them and you want to interact at some level and listen to points of view or encourage. And so I think it's a building block for living in general. But the artists that I've seen that come through and just have mega success that I've had anything to do with or know are those types that they really like people. And at the end of the day, they have communicated that in some way to a fan base that says, hey, they appreciate me.
Right.
You know?
Huh.
But you're right. We had the privilege of singing with so many artists through the years that you can kind of watch the ones that are just into their art and don't like people in general. They don't enjoy the crowd. They don't enjoy necessarily the concert setting. You can see it on them. And the crowd tends to be the crowd, eventually, when it all boils down, that can enjoy the music, but they don't need artist interaction anyway. So their personality types seem to follow each other.
I see what you're saying.
Yeah.
Now, are you referring to, when you're talking about all this, are you referring strictly to an audience connection? Or what about, peer-to-peer or business connections backstage and that kind of thing?
Yeah, well, I'd say in general, if someone's a horse's rear backstage, they're going to be a horse's rear on stage at some point. Mm-hmm. You're going to see it. And if they're easy to be around and they're fun backstage, you're going to see that too on stage.
Right.
I'm not a real believer in using music like an actor's type of thing, which some artists do, and they can use it well. I think music is like a train.
You mean where you're putting on a character?
On characters. I'm not built that way. I tend to sing out of my experiences, out of a belief system, out of what I want to see maybe come to be in my life, dreams, aspirations. My music comes from that type of source, whereas some guys are able to put on a story and communicate it, even though it's not their story.
Right.
I have a harder time doing that kind of thing. But anyway, music, I think, is like a train, and you put on the train what you want the train to move down the tracks. And I think its most powerful use is philosophy of some kind, to put a philosophical view on the train of music and move it down the road.
Well, let's hear a song. Gentlemen, hit the tuner buttons on those venue DIs. Let's make sure we can hear both of you.
We should mention we are using LR Bags Venue DIs here in the studio.
We have Jason and Jason playing guitar.
Yes, sir. The Jason Brothers.
The Jason Brothers. All right, what you going to sing for us?
Well, I thought we'd do the single that we've got out right now called Pray About Everything.
Nice.
Does that work?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, real quick, are you guys singing too?
Yeah.
Are you?
Yeah,
okay.
This gentleman's going to sing
in
with us a little bit.
You sing out of this one.
Yeah.
We've got a little rearranging to do in the studio here.
All right. Does this look right?
That looks great.
All right.
Now we're ready to go.
You guys good?
Let's hit it.
All right. Kick her off, boys.
Time is tight and money's short. River's up and the weatherman, he's calling for another storm. Pressure's on, margins thin. Gotta figure out a fix for this awful fix I'm in. Oh mama, what am I gonna do? She said, child, there's only one thing you can do. Hey, don't worry about nothing. Let it go, see what tomorrow brings. Don't worry about nothing, pray about everything.
It's good.
Love is blind, fate don't care. Lose your grip and your balloons go sailing off into the air. Oh mama, what am I gonna do? And she said, child, there's only one thing you can do. Well, don't worry about nothing. Just let it go, see what tomorrow brings. Don't worry about nothing, pray about everything. Hey, pray about everything. Oh, take a walk, take a breath. I'll give it all a rest. Take a cane pole to the fishing hole and catch a couple of fish. And just like that, toss them back, make a little wish. Yeah, pray about everything. Well, don't worry about nothing. Just let it go, see what tomorrow brings. Don't worry about it, stress about it, fret about it. No, don't worry about nothing. Hey, let it go, see what tomorrow brings. Don't worry about nothing.
Come on,
pray about everything. Yeah, pray about everything. Pray.
Yeah.
Yeehaw.
Very nice.
Wow.
There you go.
Wow, wow, wow.
Good job, guys.
Well, I'm curious, because after you left college, I read that you spent some time doing vocal coaching and teaching and that kind of thing. And what prompted you to give that up and pack it up and move to Nashville? Talk about that decision.
Well, you know, I never really intended to try to teach. I wasn't educated as a teacher. I have a good time with folks, and so I communicate, and teaching came pretty naturally. I just didn't feel equipped and feel like that was an area of interest that I wanted to really focus on. So I gave it a year. I didn't actually get into that job on purpose. It kind of happened accidentally.
Yeah.
And I filled a need, essentially, at the school. But once I'd gotten them through that time, I said, hey, I think I'm going to try something else. And, you know, wife and I had just been married a year, lived in Atlanta. And we decided, hey, let's give it a shot in Nashville and see if I read music well enough and can sing well enough to make a living in the studio. And my intent was to go to the studio and build a life there and not necessarily try to become an artist. I didn't really have this, I gotta be me, you know, kind of thing where I had to get on stage and be me. I was content to just be able to make music, and I have fun with music. So we took a shot at it in 1985 and moved up here. And it hit pretty quickly for me in the studio. I was just really fortunate and blessed to be able to fill a need that was there.
Well, I just think it's brilliant the way you presented yourself that, you know, hey, let me come in and sing. If you like what I do, pay me. And if you don't,
nothing lost.
Nothing lost. That's brilliant.
Well, you know, it was out of necessity for the most part at some point, and just a work ethic. I was taught a work ethic as a kid growing up in West Texas and New Mexico. The folks that I grew up around worked, you know, you just work for a living. And you attempted to please those you worked for, and if you couldn't, you know, just tell me straight up and I'll go do something else type of thing.
Well, obviously things really kind of heated up for your career when you joined the Gaither Vocal Band. How did that come about?
Well, the guy that started that group, Bill Gaither, is in Christian music. He's just one of those types that kept his finger on the pulse of new talent, new people around, because he kind of is a, I don't know what you'd call Bill. He's got so many talents. He finds good talent, mines it, and puts it out in front of people. To a jeweler, maybe he would be one who picks a good stone and puts it in a good setting. You know what I mean? And so Bill made it his business to just be in touch with the new kids in town that had moved into town because he had need of singers in his organization oftentimes. And at the point, the vocal band made a change in its personnel. He called a friend of mine whom I worked for a lot in the studio named Bev Darnell, and Bev said, hey, I got the guy for you. And she suggested that Bill and I get together. At that point, we knew each other, but not well, and got together and sang with the group. And I had a lot of experience at blending with other voices around me, obviously.
Yeah, yeah.
And read music well and just very adapted to creating music and loved the atmosphere in their organization, one of creativity and a purpose. I am real purpose driven. I wanted it to be something that I could sink my teeth into and believe, not just bring home a paycheck.
Right.
And I felt all those qualities there. And at the point he said, hey, well, you want to try this? I thought, well,
yeah,
nothing ventured, nothing gained, you know, give it a shot.
You know, we could probably spend a whole hour just talking about Gaither, but the Gaither band, but with as far as going solo, I know from playing in bands forever, the first time I actually went out by myself with just my guitar, I felt naked. I mean, how did you make that transition, and what adjustments had to be made for you?
Well, that's a perfect analogy. I mean, it really is. You feel naked. You just feel alone, and it's so scary.
Those guys with you,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah, it really is unnerving. I would have run out the back door had there been a back door at my first concert as a soloist, because it feels very much alone. You know, you don't realize how much you have leaned on all those around you through the years. So it was very nerve-wracking. I felt I had something in me I wanted to say and I wanted to express, and knew that time was not my friend. I don't like time. I think time's a piece of junk. I can't wait until we don't have to deal with time anymore. But I say it this way to get the point across quickly, but I went from black hair to gray hair, white hair, in my tenure in the vocal band. And before it turned loose, I wanted to get this record done, you know,
because
they spent a lot of time and money making my mug recognizable with TV appearances and things that they did. So I said, I want to capitalize on that and make a record, because I love country music for lots of reasons, but one of the primary reasons being it's a storytelling format.
Mm-hmm.
I love that. I think that's the most powerful way to communicate truth, so I'm drawn to that. You can really draw someone in with a great first line, you know, and country music is just fabulous for that. I like major keys. I think there's enough reality in my life alone with my eight kids and our life and everybody's life. You got four, you got two. Your lives are full. You know, most everyone's life's full. I don't need to hear someone else's depressing story. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Keep the minor keys unless you're going to get somewhere with it. You know, so I like that about country music. I like real instruments. and making music with a band, you know, rather than can things. And so there were lots of reasons. I grew up in West Texas listening to country music and loved it, fell in love with it. And so I just had the desire to approach life with if I don't give it a shot now, you know, I don't want to kick myself later.
Right.
Saying, shoot, I wished I'd have tried that. You
well,
know?
I'm glad you did. We got to take a break. We're going to be back with some more of Guy Penrod. By the way, GuyPenrod.com, right?
Yeah, yeah.
All right, throw that out there. We'll be right back. Back to the Music Row Show, brought to you by Larrivé Guitars, and that is a great track off of our guest's new album. Our guest, by the way, is Guy Penrod, and his album is Breathe Deep, and that tune is called Pray About Everything. Actually, we just heard them do a great acoustic version of that song just a few minutes ago.
I'm curious, Guy, what about vocally? Because, you know, just like moving from musical theater to playing in a garage band, you know, that requires some stylistic tweaking, and going from a gospel quartet to country, you know, I think when I hear the stuff that you did with the Gaither Band, it's open and you have to keep it a certain way because you got three other people singing with you.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, vocally, how was it for you to then go into something like this?
Well, that's astute. I mean, your observation, obviously. You're
Thank
a musician.
You.
Oh, man. I'm not going to hear the end of that now.
Well, you know.
Man.
Just call a spade, brother.
No, astute.
It is. I mean, you're right. There takes, you have to cognitively and cognizantly choose to approach a certain type of music differently.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have to try to be critical enough with your own ear to say, am I doing it? Am I actually making this leap, or is it just I want to, and therefore my ears are hearing something that's not true? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so it was a bit scary to try to approach a country sound after 14 years of having a very defined way that I was communicating musically in a gospel group. And there is some obvious differences.
Mm-hmm.
And open is that's why I said astute, because that's true. I had to sing more openly, and I had to hit notes in a different way. So
you can't slide into them when you're working with the quartet, unless
exactly.
Everybody is.
It's not quite as conversational.
Mm-hmm.
The approach lyrically is not quite as conversational as this type of music. And actually, that's why I wanted to make a country record, because I like a conversational approach.
Mm-hmm.
I believe in believability, reality, from the perspective that what you see is what you get, that kind of thing. And so the musical switch required for me teaming up with someone that I respected musically and understood philosophically where I was coming from. And my buddy Brent Rowan, who produced the record, does both. He's a consummate musician, got a fabulous ear, and a good judge of music.
Mm-hmm.
And musicality and believability, all of that. And we share a lot of philosophical similarities there. So I went to Brent and said, hey, man, would you be interested in trying a record with me that is this? And then laid out the idea for the record. He said, yes, I really would. I think we could make a great record together.
Beautiful.
And so I really put myself in someone else's hands at that point, and I trusted Brent to give me some good instruction and good leadership as far as the way I was communicating vocally, because I respected him.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's key in that kind of relationship. And I think he did a great job in doing that. He understood where I came from. He understood where I was wanting to go.
Mm-hmm.
And then he gave me a great environment to explore and do that.
Nice.
Very good.
All right. Well, we're going to take one more break, but we promise we'll be back with more of Guy Penrod here on the Music Row Show.
single mom holding down two jobs to give your kids the change you never got.
All right, welcome back to the Music Row Show. It's brought to you by Larravee Guitars, and that's a little more of Guy Penrod off of his album Breathe Deep, and that tune is called, let's see here, More Power to You. Love that tune. Let's turn your mic on there. There we go.
That's a Jason Matthews song. Great guy.
Nice. Yeah. Well, we're kind of running out of time. Would you care to do another song for us?
I would love to. Perfect time. Valentine's tomorrow. This is my love song to all you sweet folks who've stuck it out. Kick it off.
Sitting there in church last Sunday, you reached across and took my hand. Heaven help me, I started thinking about bucket seats in my old Trans Am. Parked there in your parents' driveway, couldn't take my eyes off you. It felt so good to hear you tell me you loved me too, that'll never get old. Even when we do, early morning cups of coffee, late night kisses on my cheek. Know when I got someone else, praying for my soul to keep. Shaky hands and one small diamond, the way I felt that night in June. Along with all the other memories I hold on to, that'll never get old. Even when we do, and even when we're sitting there with nothing but silver in our hair and a couple of matching rocking chairs, just watching the world go by, we'll load the grandkids in the car and drive to the Dairy Queen. The whole way there, they'll be rolling their eyes at me for hitting on you like we're still 17. You know I'm gonna try. I'll slow down a little, you might even slow down too. But as long as this old heart's still beating, I'll be loving you. That'll never get old, that'll never get old, even when we do. That'll never get old, even when we do.
Thank you so much for coming in and hanging out with us tonight. We've had a great time.
Man, it's been my pleasure. Thanks for opening your house to me.
Yeah.
Thank you. We got some fun stuff for you. We have a deluxe oil change from Ultimate Tire and Car Care.
I'm on with it.
I believe we have a pair of jeans from Diamond Gusset Jeans.
Absolutely.
You know I'll wear
those. Best jeans you'll ever wear, made right here in Tennessee. And we love them.
That's right. We got good stuff next week, right?
Yeah, next week. Check this out. We got the voice doctor to the stars, Dr. Robert Ossoff from the Vanderbilt Voice Center.
Mm-hmm.
He's the,
mm-hmm.
as our guest just pointed out, the Mac Daddy of vocal cords around here. And then we also got hit songwriter Tom Kimmel and the folks from the Musicians on Call organization.
That's right. I want to say yesterday was intern Peyton's 12th birthday, so happy birthday to intern Peyton.
All right.
And come on out next week and listen to us.
Rock on. See you next week.